Radio Prague News.
Prime Minister Petr Nečas has said that a Czech contribution to the EU debt crisis scheme will likely be far lower than expected. The Czech government has agreed that a referendum on joining the EU fiscal pact will be held either separately or together with a referendum on entering the Eurozone. And a woman who was attacked by a group of Romanis on New Year's Day in the North Bohemian town of Varnsdorf has died in hospital. Prime Minister Petr Nečas said on Wednesday that the Czech Central Bank would most likely not channel 3.5 million euro, about 90 billion Czech crowns, through the International Monetary Fund as part of a European Union scheme aimed at fighting the debt crisis in the Eurozone. EU leaders had requested that Prague commit that amount at a summit last month. The Czech contribution, which is in effect a loan, will be very significantly lower since the majority of the government are opposed to contributing the sum requested, the Prime Minister told reporters. The actual amount the Czech Republic is willing to contribute will be announced by the Czech Finance Minister Miroslav Kalousek in a week from now. At a last-ditch summit in Brussels in December, EU leaders drafted a plan under which European central banks would channel a total of 150 billion euros through the IMF in exchange for fresh pledges of fiscal probity from European governments. The Czech government has agreed that a referendum should be held on the Czech Republic's possible participation in a new European Union treaty aimed at tightening budgetary controls in the Eurozone. The Civic Democrats, who lead the government, on Wednesday pushed the policy through in conjunction with Public Affairs, the smallest party in the coalition. Top 09 deputies were opposed to the idea. Prime Minister Petr Nečas said a referendum on signing up to the pact could be linked to a second referendum on adopting the common European currency. He also said the cabinet would need the authorization of the president before it could negotiate or sign the treaty. President Václav Klaus has been critical of the pact and has said he will refuse to put his signature to it. A woman who was attacked by a group of Romanis on New Year's Day in the North Bohemian town of Varnsdorf has died in hospital. Police said on Wednesday that an autopsy will shed light on whether she died as a result of injuries suffered at the hands of her attackers. Two of them have been charged with assault and battery. Police believe that one of the suspects may have had racial motives. Some 200 people gathered in Varnsdorf on Sunday to express their support for the woman and her family, who were with her when the attack happened. Crime and racial tensions have been escalating in the town since last year. A month after the death of former Czech President Václav Havel, an elementary school in the central Bohemian town of Poděbrady has been renamed after the late president. In a public ceremony, the school's new name was unveiled on Wednesday. Václav Havel had studied in Poděbrady and lived nearby the school that now carries his name. It is the first school in the country to be named after Mr. Havel, who died on December 18, 2011, at the age of 75. And now let's take a brief look at the weather. Midweek, the weather will be cloudy with some sunny periods. Daytime temperatures should range between minus 3 and plus 3 degrees Celsius. My name is Sarah Barufka, and this brings us to the end of today's news.
You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Daniela Lazarová. Coming up in today's program, automobile production is pulling the country's economy. We'll look at why the country's car producers are not feeling the pinch of the crisis. What's wrong with the country's political culture? We'll talk to a commentator about why MPs' frequent breach of good manners goes unpunished. And in today's spotlight, Jan Richter will investigate an underground tunnel dating back to the days of Emperor Rudolf II. We'll wind up a half-hour show with a Czech lesson as usual, so do please stay with us. To Despite gloomy news and grim forecasts all around these days, one sector of the economy, namely the automotive industry, is in top gear. In 2011, two out of three manufacturers, Hyundai and Škoda Auto, exceeded previous expectations. And while TPCA suffered a drop in production, all three together produced a record 1,186,000 vehicles. And they're gearing up for an equally good year in 2012. Readying to launch mid-price new models aimed at both the domestic market and markets abroad. Jan Wellinger spoke to Wojciech Met, a journalist from Motor Press Bohemia.
Let's begin with the biggest player, it's Škoda, and they are releasing a Citigo 5-door, which is a small city car, should be launched in the first half of this year. And in the second half, they are planning to launch a Rapid, which is something between Fabia and Octavia. It's a four-door saloon.
Is this a car that is basically looking at the mid-level of the market?
Yeah, because Škoda has always been known for a good value for money. And this car should be stressing on this point even more. The DPCA triplets are quite expensive for its class. And they are planning a bigger facelift, or it's not a new generation. It's more like a bigger facelift for this year. Of all their three cars, and Hyundai is now launching a new 30. The i30 is the second generation. I don't think that either of them will be competitive for Škoda Rapid.
How well are they doing on the foreign markets? Because Europe is going through a continuing crisis. How is it that the automotive industry, at least in the Czech Republic, seems isolated against that crisis?
All the three manufacturers seems to cope with the crisis quite well. Škoda, because of their value for money. TPCA, because in Western countries, buyers like to buy such a small cars for city use as a second or third car in the family. And Hyundai is beginning to be a real big player on the world market. Partly because for Škoda, it depends on the Chinese and Russian market. They are building a new factory in Russia or rebuilding one. And the world success of Hyundai is due to improving quality and improving the range of number of vehicles they are producing.
Wojciech Met, a journalist for Motor Press Bohemia, speaking there to Radio Prague's Jan Wellinger. Now turning to Czech politics, is giving the finger to a fellow member of parliament or calling him an idiot acceptable? It is in the Czech Republic, at least according to MPs themselves. The Mandate and Immunity Committee of the Lower House this week dismissed two such cases and said they would only resort to punishment if the situation worsened. Jan Richter talked to political analyst Karel Müller from Prague's University of Economics and asked him whether we should come to accept such coarse behavior.
I think there is actually no reason to think that political culture of political elites should be somewhat different from political culture of the public at large. So we can see these kind of behavior or social patterns in a civic life. I wouldn't think that this is something specific for political culture. Though, of course, the political elite is here to solve the problems and to perform conflict, so it's somewhat more visible and influential when such behavior being performed by the political elite.
Do you think that this is one of the reasons why such behavior is acceptable in the Czech Republic, precisely because it's not that different from how normal people, so to speak, behave?
The question is, what does it mean acceptable? I mean, I was just looking at some public pollsters, and over 80% of the public dislike such behavior, or they condemn it. So I think the public doesn't react to it very positively. So it doesn't mean that actually the public is being immune to such behavior too. So I don't think it's acceptable from the political culture normative perspective, but it seems to be common ground, but the public is not signing up for it.
Do you think, Mr. Miller, that this is something unique to the Czech Republic or the post-communist countries? Because some commentators noted that Czech politicians often see politics as a struggle between good and evil, which gives it a special sort of justification of any means of fight and political competition. Do you see these things in Western Europe as well?
Well, That's a very good question. I think the element of it, the politics as a good and evil, probably could be found in other more established liberal democracies too. Though I think there is some aspect of post-communist legacy to it. So I think, number one, political conflicts during communism were seen as dangerous, as a possibly situation with very threatening consequences for their actors. So I think this political culture still works. And the second level is probably the level that, of course, the political power, it's being more abused, misconducted, misused in post-communist countries than we find in more established Western democracies. So I think there is some element of it that, of course, if we see struggle between liberal culture and clientelist culture, then this somewhat resembles the conflict between good and evil. I think the problem is if there is no space for more problem-based politics, if there is no room left for proper policies and politics and for reasonable and rational conflict. And sometimes the Czech politics and other post-communist countries indeed leave very little space for problem-based, problem-oriented, problem-solving politics.
You've been following the British parliamentary culture, which is, of course, the cradle of parliamentary systems around the world. How would you say the Czech political culture has changed over the last 20 years? Do you think we came closer to the situation in the UK?
I think the situation changed a little bit. Of course, this political culture somehow is parallel to political events, phases. Like we had 90s, there was more kind of enthusiasm, like public was imbued by certain expectations. These expectations were being failed later. So I think the major difference still is that this certain ritualization of the conflicts in Czech politics sometimes leave very little space therefore for problem solving politics, for real issues, problems, politics. So I think what's as well very important and what's quite striking if we compare British and Czech politics, for instance, that British politics is sometimes seen as adversarial, as very very vicious almost. But there is always this adversality. It's part of certain basic loyalties towards the political system as such and towards the principle of liberal democracies. I remember I was quite struck when I had one reaction of one British MP who was reacting as well in radio interview to very critical speech of his political opponent. And the way he started was, he said, well, I think that was very brilliant opposition speech, but there were this kind of matter of facts, conflicts or clashes or disagreements. So I think that's very important to feel and to present these element loyalties towards liberal democracy's principles and the political system loyalty and bonds towards it.
Karel Müller from Prague's University of Economics speaking there to Jan Richter. A reminder that you're with Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, where it's time to go places. And today we'll take you to a place you have almost certainly never been to. The Habsburg Emperor Rudolf II left a deep mark in Czech history. Various legends and myths around the 16th century ruler who made Prague his imperial seat and whose diverse interests made the city a center of Renaissance arts and sciences. One monument from his time is hidden beneath the surface of the earth, a water tunnel carved deep into the rock of one of Prague's hills. In this edition of Spotlight, Jan Richter visits Rudolf's tunnel running under Letná Hill.
A small archway beneath the Vltava's busy left embankment is closed with an iron bar. This is the sudden entrance to a kilometre-long underground tunnel constructed more than 400 years ago, during the reign of the legendary emperor Rudolf II. The tunnel runs under Letná Hill, just across the river from Prague's old town, and serves the function it was originally built for, supplying water from the Vltava to the ponds on the other side of the hill. As we pass through the narrow entrance into the tunnel, wearing waders and helmets, my guide Jiří Pavlata from Prague's Water Maintenance Services instructs me how to walk properly on the tunnel's uneven floor.
Mm-hmm.
With the dark, muddy water of the Vltava up to our knees, we can see that the start of the tunnel is rather straight and only begins to bend after several dozen meters. This, says my guide, is most likely due to the fact that the composition of the rock, which the 16th century miners carved through, is different at every stretch.
I think they knew what they were doing and knew how to measure the route of the tunnel. But I think the rock just crumbled and they had to pass around it. I really don't believe that they would make these turns for no reason.
Says Jiří Pavlata as we advance further into the dark. Some 40 meters above us, sitting literally on top of the tunnel, is the National Technical Museum. There, archivist Jan Hozák tells me about one of the most treasured items in the museum's collection, the original plan of the tunnel, drawn on parchment in colors. It's over 2.5 meters long and was made by the leading mining engineer of the time, Lazarus Erker von Schreckenfels.
This is a plan of a significant monument from the late Middle Ages, which was built between 1583 and 1593. It is known as Rudolf's Water Tunnel, which connects the Vltava River with Stromovka Park, which was then known as the Royal Game Reserve. Rudolf II wanted the tunnel to supply water to fish ponds that were going to be established in the park, along with fountains and things like that.
The tunnel took 10 years to complete. Whenever the imperial coffers ran dry, construction was halted and resumed when the emperor again had money to spend. But the unstable and varied rock material presented a serious challenge for the miners brought in from the famous silver mines of Kutná Hora. Jan Hozák describes how the tunnel was excavated.
They started by digging 5 vertical shafts along the route of the tunnel. The last of them was completed in 1588. They were around 190 meters apart, but one of the shafts had to be backfilled because they struck a strong water spring. This was a big complication and delayed the whole project.
This is one of the shafts which the miners used to start excavating the tunnel horizontally. People often think it's just a sewage cover and threw garbage in, but it stays on top of the vault and doesn't fall through into the tunnel. But every now and then we have to get up there and clean it.
Once a year, Jiří Pavlata and his men from the Municipal Water Maintenance Services clean the entire tunnel. They take out buckets full of river mud brought in with the water. The exhausting work takes about 2 weeks and it's not very pleasant because of the confined space and the dampness, but also because of the rather strong smell of the mud. However, Jan Hozák says water in the Vltava used to be much dirtier in the past.
The river was very dirty because all the workshops and factories that had been established in Smíchov and further up the stream released their waste into it. In the 19th century, the tunnel was part of a water supply system for the households on the other side of the hill, but I'm sure people didn't drink it.
At one point, we come into a wider part of the tunnel where 2 mining crews digging from opposite directions met. However, they missed each other by a few meters and had to connect the 2 passages, creating a larger opening. It's difficult to say whether this was caused by an error in calculation or by the poor quality of the rock. The workers were under close supervision and their progress was meticulously marked in the plan.
Zajímavé je, když se to takhle otočí o 90 stupňů.
When you look at the plan sideways, you see how far the miners advanced by a certain date. They are usually marked by 6-month periods. Here you can see the date, the 31st of December 1589. Here is the 1st of July 1590, and so on. The plan also provides an overview of the costs.
V závěru je jakási přehledná tabulka, kolik na ní bylo vynaloženo.
The construction cost over 66,000 white groschen, which was the local currency at the time. The costs were astronomical. The daily wages of a manual laborer at the time was around 3 or 4 groschen, while a glass of wine cost 1 grosch, and a three-room house in Prague cost 420 groschen. The plan of the tunnel also shows what that part of Prague looked like on the surface.
What we know today as Letná Plain had a different name at that time. It was called the Belvedere Plain after a Renaissance palace near Prague Castle. When you look at this part, which shows the end of the tunnel in Stromovka, you can see what the park looked like, and you could even identify the individual trees. But the plain at the time was barren.
The plain itself has an interesting history as well. Most of Emperor Rudolf's collections were looted during the Thirty Years' War, including the large parchment with the plan of the tunnel. It appeared again in the late 19th century at an auction in Paris. Jan Hozák explains how it became part of the museum's archive.
We received the plan in 1908 from Prague's Museum of Decorative Arts. The head of the museum bought it at an auction in Paris. We don't know where the plan was for those 3 centuries. But when the technical museum was established, they gave it to us, and now it's the oldest and most precious item we have in our collections.
After a good half hour of wading through the tunnel, we slowly approach its other end at Stromovka Park. The temperature noticeably drops, and my guide Jiří Pavlata explains that as the cold air gets in here, the water in the tunnel sometimes freezes as far as some 50 meters from the entrance. This part of the tunnel was in the past open to the public. However, it was damaged in the 2002 floods that hit the capital, and for the time being it will remain closed. But Jan Hozák from the National Technical Museum believes that perhaps in the future the tunnel should be open again.
I think people would be quite interested in visiting the tunnel, not just visitors but also local people. It's quite an adventure to walk through the tunnel. It's more than 1 kilometer long and it feels like you are in a medieval mine. So I think this would definitely be interesting, but it would take a lot of money to make it safe.
Although the tunnel is not likely to open for the public anytime soon, those interested in this fascinating monument now have a unique chance to see the original plan. The National Technical Museum is going to exhibit the artifact to commemorate the 400th anniversary of Rudolf II's death.
That edition of Spotlight was prepared and presented by Jan Richter. And I will wind up today's half hour from Prague with another part in Pavla Horáková's popular language series ABC of Czech, which we are currently rerunning.
Hello and welcome again to Radio Prague's Czech language series, the ABC of Czech. Today I'm here with Vladimír Tax.
Dobrý den.
Last time we talked about institutions and bureaucracy in the Czech Republic. Before we move on to the next letter in the alphabet, let's stop to talk about another typical Czech phenomenon, not so far from the topic of bureaucracy. Titles. If you have it, flaunt it, Czechs think. And people with academic titles usually wear them with pride, putting them before or after their name wherever they can. On the doors of their offices, on their letterboxes and business cards, or in the yellow pages. It is considered good manners to address people with their title. The most usual ones are
Ingenieur,
from the English engineer, that is someone who graduated from a technical or economic university. The female variety is
Ingenierka.
The full title you're supposed to use is then
Pane Ingeniere
or
Paní Inženýrko,
that is Mr. Engineer or Mrs. Engineer in the vocative case. Another one is doctor. Not only medical doctors, but also doctors of philosophy, teaching, natural sciences and law are called Mr. or Mrs. Doctor.
Pane doktore, paní doktorko.
University professors are
pan profesor
or
paní profesorka.
And assistant professors are
pan docent
and
paní docentka.
A title recently introduced to the collection is
magister
and
magistra.
Magister roughly equals to a master's degree, and those who have it are supposed to be addressed
pane magistře, paní magistro.
Another recently added title is
bakalář,
the equivalent of a bachelor's degree. Don Sparling from the Department of English and American Studies at Masaryk University in Brno has a lot of experience with Czechs learning English and English speakers learning Czech. He agrees that using titles is deeply embedded in Czech culture.
Czechs love titles. Czechs have a mania for titles. They're even worse than the Austrians in that respect. I think they inherited this instinct from the Austrians, but they've developed it a stage farther. And Czechs are always trying to find ways in English of using titles and using titles the way they're used in Czech. You know, you address a person as, you know, pana profesora, as literally speaking, literally translated, Mr. Professor, and so on. And you get a lot of comic situations there where it just doesn't sound natural at all in English. And it's a very deep instinct. I mean, I once had a man I was doing translations for, and he couldn't get over the idea that I didn't want a title and didn't have a title he could use. And so he used to address letters to me as Mr. Expert Translator Don Sparling. He just had some need to have a title there, you know.
Don Sparling there on how Czechs love to use titles. Not all of them, though. The younger generation in particular feel more relaxed about it and don't insist on being addressed with their full title. And that's all for today. So from me, magistra Pavla Horáková.
And me, bakalář Vladimír Tax.
Until next.
Naschledanou.
Goodbye.
That was another part of Pavla Horáková's popular language series, ABC of Czech, and I'm afraid that's all we have for you today. You'll find us online at radio.cz. Our programs are there in text and sound, plus a lot of interesting information about the Czech Republic. Should you like to contact us, then please write to english@radio.cz. Or you can write snail mail to Vinohradská 12, postal code 12099, Prague, the Czech Republic. We'll be glad to hear from you, as always. This is Daniela Lazarová saying thanks for joining us today and take care.